Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into the nuts and bolts of motion and time, taking those core ideas and making sure they, well, stick.
Yeah, the mission today is a focused recap of that key chapter on motion and time. It's fundamental stuff, really.
Yeah.
The system we use for everything from, I don't know, timing a run to tracking planets. You want the essentials, right? The core concepts, without getting lost in the weeds. Okay, let's unpack this. We're hitting four main things. Time itself and how we measure it. Then the different types of motion you see around you, how we actually calculate speed. And finally, those distance time graphs, which are super useful visual tools.
Exactly. These are like the building blocks. Master these four and you've basically got the language of how we measure physical change. Understanding time, how things move consistently or not. It's crucial for coordinating, well, almost everything. Daily schedules, lab experiments, even global time zones.
Right. So by the end of this, you won't just know the formulas. You'll get the meaning behind uniform versus non-uniform motion and how, you know, a simple line on a graph tells a whole story about speed.
Okay, let's start with the big one, time. It's the duration in which stuff happens. Essential for describing motion, obviously. But think about it before clocks, like real clocks. How did people even agree on units of time? How did our ancestors manage?
Well, they started with what was regular and easily observable in nature, natural cycles. The earliest units were tied directly to the cosmos.
Yeah.
You know, the day sunrise to sunrise, the year Earth going around the sun, the moon cycle for the month. Nature was the first clock.
Okay, cosmic scale. But for daily life, that's pretty broad.
Exactly. Those are too big for, like, scheduling your day. The real ingenuity came when they needed smaller, repeatable chunks of time. That's where you get things like the sundial tracking shadows. Or the water clock, based on dripping water. Sand clocks, too, the hourglass concept. They all use some kind of consistent physical process.
Pretty clever, but I imagine things like, I don't know, humidity affecting the sand flow, or maybe temperature for the water clock. They couldn't have been perfectly accurate.
You hit it right on the head. They weren't perfectly accurate. And that need for better accuracy, that's what pushed innovation. It led to probably the biggest single leap in timekeeping, figuring out the pendulum. Galilei first noticed its unique properties, how it swings.
Ah, the pendulum.
Yes. And based on Galileo's observations, Christian Huygens actually built the first pendulum clock back in 1656. Here's where it gets really interesting. The physics behind it. A pendulum swing, we call that an oscillation. It goes from one side through the middle to the other side and back.
Okay.
And the time it takes for one full swing back and forth, that's the time period.
So what made this mechanical clock so much better than, say, sand dripping? Why was it such a breakthrough?
Consistency. That's the key. For small swings, the time period of a simple pendulum is remarkably constant. It just doesn't change much. And crucially, get this, it doesn't depend on how heavy the bob is, not on the mass.
Really? That seems counterintuitive.
It does, but it's true for small angles. It only depends on the length of the string or rod. Longer string, longer period, shorter string, shorter period. That predictable, repeatable swing gave us the first reliable mechanical beat to measure time accurately.
And that consistency let us finally standardize things, define a base unit everyone could agree on. Which brings us to the standard SI unit of time. The second S. And of course, we know the basic conversions, 60 seconds in a minute, 60 minutes in an hour.
Right. Though today, we've gone even further. Modern clocks, like quartz watches, use vibrations of quartz crystals. An electric current makes them oscillate incredibly fast and extremely stably, way beyond the pendulum now.
Okay, so time is our backdrop. Established, measured. Now let's talk about things moving through time. Motion itself.
Right. Motion is basically just a change in position, but it's always relative to something else, some fixed point or object. If your position isn't changing compared to that fixed point, well, you're at rest relative to it. So motion and rest, they're always described in relation to something.
Makes sense. And we see things moving in all sorts of ways. Straight lines, curves, spinning. How do we categorize these different kinds of movement? What are the main types we need to know?
Good question. We generally break it down into four main categories for these fundamentals. Let's run through them quickly. One, rectilinear motion. That's just moving in a straight line. Mm-hmm. Think of a car on a perfectly straight road.
Okay.
Yeah, a sprinter in their lane.
Okay, straight line. Got it.
Two, circular motion. This is movement along a circular path, like a point on the rim of a spinning wheel or the Earth going around the sun.
Right.
Three, rotational motion. This is slightly different. It's when an object spins around its own axis, a fixed line through it, like the Earth spinning daily, causing day and night, or a spinning top.
Okay, circular path versus spinning on the spot. Clear difference.
And four, periodic motion, sometimes called oscillatory motion. This is any motion that repeats itself over and over in regular time intervals.
Like the pendulum we just talked about.
Exactly like the pendulum. Or a swing. Or maybe a bouncing spring. Anything with that repeating cycle.
Okay, four types. Straight, circular, rotational, repeating.
Yep. But maybe the most important distinction, especially when we get to speed and graphs, is about how consistent the motion is.
Ah, you mean uniform versus non-uniform motion.
Precisely. That's a critical difference.
So uniform motion is kind of the ideal case, right? Moving along a straight line, constant speed, covering the exact same distance in every equal time interval. Like, perfect conditions.
Textbook perfect, yeah.
But reality is usually messier. That's non-uniform motion.
Absolutely. Most real-world movement is non-uniform. Your speed is changing. You cover different distances in equal time intervals. Think about driving a car. You speed up, you slow down for traffic, you turn corners. Your speed is almost never perfectly constant. That's non-uniform motion.
Right. Traffic jams, red lights, hills, all non-uniform.
And because real motion is usually non-uniform, we need a way to quantify how fast or slow things are actually going, even if it's changing. Which brings us straight to speed.
Speed. It basically tells us how quickly an object is covering distance, relating that distance to the time it takes. Pretty intuitive, a plane is faster than a bike because it covers way more distance in the same amount of time.
Or less time for the same distance, yeah.
And the core formula here, the one everyone needs to remember, is super straightforward. Speed equals distance traveled divided by time taken. That's the heart of it.
That's it. Speed, distance, time. And once you grasp that relationship, you can rearrange it to find the other pieces too. Like if you know the speed and time, distance, speed, x time. Or if you know distance and speed, time, distance, speed. They all come from that basic definition.
Makes sense. It's all interconnected.
And the standard unit, the SI unit for speed, is meters per second. Although, you know, in everyday life, we often use kilometers per hour. Kilometers, especially for vehicles.
Right, like on a car's dashboard.
Exactly. Now, when we calculate speed for a real journey, like that car trip, which is non-uniform, say a car travels 100 kilometers and it takes 4 hours. We calculate speed equal 100 kilometers, 4 hours equals 25 kilometers. But it's crucial to remember that's the average speed over the whole trip.
Good point. The actual speed at any single moment probably varied a lot, sometimes faster, sometimes stopped in traffic.
Precisely. That 25 kilometer adder is the average. The speed at any specific instant is called instantaneous speed.
And cars actually show us that instantaneous speed, don't they? You've got the speedometer right there on the dashboard. That needle tells you your speed right now, usually in kilometer.
Yep. And next to it, usually, is the odometer.
Right. The odometer tracks the total distance the car has traveled over its lifetime, typically in kilometers.
So those two instruments give you the real-time data, instantaneous speed, and total distance, which you could use to analyze the motion or calculate average speeds later.
Okay, so we can measure time, classify motion, calculate speed. Now, how do we visualize all this? That's where graphs come in, right?
Exactly. The distance-time graph is a really powerful way to see the story of an object's motion at a glance.
So the setup is standard. Time goes along the bottom, the horizontal x-axis.
Uh-huh.
And distance traveled goes up the side, the vertical y-axis. The starting point where the axes meet is the origin.
Yep. Time zero, distance zero, usually.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. You mentioned the graph tells a story. How does the shape of the line on that graph reveal what kind of motion is happening?
It's surprisingly simple once you know the key shapes. It really comes down to the slope or steepness of the line. There are basically three scenarios to remember for these fundamentals.
Okay, lay them out for us.
First, uniform motion. Remember, constant speed, equal distances in equal times.
Hmm.
On a distance-time graph, this shows up as a sloping straight line.
Straight line, constant slope. Makes sense.
And here's a key insight. The steeper that straight line, the higher the constant speed. A gentler slope means a lower speed.
Got it. Steeper slope, faster speed.
Second, non-uniform motion. This is where the speed is changing, accelerating or decelerating. The graph for this is a curved line.
Ah, okay, not straight anymore.
Right, the curve shows that the relationship between distance and time isn't constant. The slope is changing point by point, indicating the speed is varying.
So straight line means constant speed, curved line means changing speed. What's the third one?
Third, what if the object isn't moving at all? It's at rest.
Zero speed.
Zero speed. On the graph, this appears as a horizontal line. It's parallel to the time axis.
Because time is passing?
Time is increasing along the x-axis, But the distance value on the y-axis isn't changing. It stays the same. So horizontal line means stationary.
Sloping straight line, uniform speed, curved line, changing speed, horizontal line, stopped. That's a neat summary.
Those three shapes are your visual toolkit for understanding motion from these graphs.
Perfect. That really distills it down. We've walked through how we got standardized time thanks to things like the pendulum's constancy. We've covered the four main types of motion: straight, circular, spinning, and repeating.
We nailed the core speed formula. Speed equals distance time and how to use it. And just now, how to read those distance time graphs. Straight for uniform, curved for non-uniform, horizontal for rest. You should now have that solid knowledge stack to really analyze motion confidently.
Absolutely. And, you know, thinking about that historical bit,
right,
it raises an interesting point. We talked about how getting an accurate measure of time, like the second from the pendulum, was so vital. That precision was the absolute bedrock needed for scientists like Isaac Newton to even formulate his laws of motion. Those laws describe how force relates to changes in motion, which means changes in speed and direction over time.
Right. You can't develop precise laws without precise measurements.
Exactly. If they couldn't measure time and distance accurately, those fundamental laws of physics simply couldn't have been discovered or proven mathematically. So think about what that reliance on measurement precision means for us today as we try to understand even more complex things about the universe, maybe touching on relativity and beyond. It all comes back to accurately measuring space and time. A powerful thought. That foundation is everything.
It really is. So keep looking around you. Notice the different types of motion. Think about the speeds involved. These principles aren't just in textbooks. They're literally everywhere, all the time.